From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning. Good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Happy birthday, by the way, to Officer Sean Jones from your sister Laurel. And next hour, Shadows of the Dark with John Zaffis. This is also day two of my frog voice. Here's what's happening. Well, now a nuclear expert says that he believes the current water leaks at the Fukushima plant are much worse than the authorities have stated. Lysel Schneider is an independent consultant who has previously advised the French and German governments. He says water is leaking out all over the site and there is no accurate figures for radiation. Meanwhile, the chairman of Japan's nuclear authority said that he feared that there would be further leaks. Not a good story. The average weekly rate for 30-year fixed-rate mortgages jumped to a two-year high. That rate is now 4.58%, up from the prior week. Can you believe stores are already getting ready for Christmas? That's right. With 120-plus days of shopping, days left until Christmas, stores are already taking up their holiday offers. They're starting all over the place. Let's check in with Miss Shedlock. Miss, this is a little too early for me, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh, earlier and earlier. I mean, we don't even have back-to-school sales are still going on, aren't they? The question as to what the Christmas season looks like, George, it's simple. It's going to depend on jobs.
It depends on jobs.
And I saw a report come out today from Gallup, and it was kind of shocking. Actually, they come out, they have this survey every day. Every day they have a job survey. They poll people. And on August 1st, their unemployment rate was 7.9%, pretty much in line with what the Fed says. On August 9th, it was 8.2. On August 17th, it was 8.6. The latest survey was 8.9. And this is daily. Every day this month it's ticked up. So if this trend is accurate, then what does that say about the next two job reports coming out from the Fed? And then what does that say about Christmas sales if those are right? That's the trend to watch, and I think we're going to see a spike in the unemployment rate in the next two job reports.
Which is not good for retailers, Mitch.
Not good for retailers. And also, you mentioned it, the spike in the
mortgage
rate.
Yep.
So that's not good for housing. If people aren't buying housing, they're not buying furniture, they're not buying carpet, they're not buying appliances either. So I don't think it looks good pretty good, George.
And then if the car sales slow down, we're right back to 2008 again.
Exactly. Exactly. And where is the pent-up demand in cars? I don't see it. I still see the millennials. I mean, the car manufacturers are dependent on those in those early age groups. They're shrinking compared to the middle class and the boomers that are now retiring. Car sales, if you look at the car sales studies, the bulk of those car sales are not going to the younger generation. This being targeted. Manufacturers are building small cars. Who's buying them? The elderly that are going back to work because they have to, not because they want to, are the ones actually buying the small cars targeted at the youth. Quite amazing.
Good point. People, older people are buying cars. They have to go back to work. So what was the most popular U.S. website last month? Turns out that Yahoo had the most unique monthly visitors in July, beating even the giant Google. Smartphones have become a major part of many people's everyday lives. More and more smartphone owners use their devices to text, email, surf the web throughout the day. Now, some people have started using them in their sleep. That's right. They are sending text while sleeping. It's become more common. In addition to being embarrassing, because it could also have some serious health consequences, let's check in with resident psychiatrist Dr. Peter Bragan. Peter, what are they doing? Are they awake when they're texting, or are they asleep?
Well, in most ways, they're asleep. I mean, if you shake them, they'll come awake, a person who's asleep, sleep doing things. And if you startle them into awakeness, they can get angry and confused. Often the things they write are inappropriate or they don't make any sense. It's a variation on sleepwalking. which we're all familiar with. People can sleepwalk, sleep eat, sleep climb out windows, sleep drive. And I think it's determined by many things other than just the fact that people are getting too obsessed with texting. I think that's certainly the case for many people who are texting 100 or 200 times a day or more. But it's also caused these sleepwalking, sleep actions. They're also caused by drinking, by disrupted sleep. They're caused by taking the typical sleeping pills. Ambien, Lunesta, Sonata can produce disastrous things like literally sleep driving your car. So I think there's a lot of things coming together. The study you mentioned, George, was like 25 to 35% of college people, late teens, young adults were...
And they need their sleep. They're not getting it.
What did you say, George?
They need their sleep.
Well, that's what I was going to pick up on. They need their sleep. They're not getting enough. They're often taking sleeping pills. They're often drinking. They're often anxious and stressed. So you've got kind of a perfect storm when they get preoccupied with their electronics and especially their smartphones for them to end up without realizing what they're doing, to hear the phone go off, to pick it up, to answer it. I think it's usually in response to a stimulus like that. They're in a deep sleep. It's usually the first few hours of sleep, but it's in a fairly deep sleep, and they hear the phone ring and a buzz or hum, and they pick it up and start doing things without the frontal cortex working. And it can be embarrassing. I think people who do it should just really assess whether maybe they should put their cell phone to sleep at night.
Yeah, no, shut it off. A lot of people have to have it open, ready to go for the next morning. Thanks, Peter. In a moment, another Peter joins us, Peter Davenport, for the entire hour as we talk about UFO reports all around this country next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Peter Davenport with us, director of the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, always a pleasure. Good to have you for the hour.
Oh, boy, this is going to be a luxury, George, and I really appreciate your sharing the airtime. It's always it's high honor to be on this program. I've always felt for the almost 18 and a half years since my first appearance on Coast to Coast, and really pleased to be back. Lots going on, and I'm looking forward to sharing a lot of the stuff with our listeners tonight.
Well, I'm glad you're here. I got a lot of emails every time you come on with your little news and inserts for us, and people saying, you got to have Peter back on. We need more, so we're going to do that this hour.
Well, my gratitude to all those listeners and supporters. I work very hard, and about the only reason I do it is, number one, to make sure the U.S. government doesn't succeed in convincing the American people that the UFO phenomenon is not real, and number two, because of all the kind words that listeners and users of our visitors to our website send to me from time to time. They go a very, very long way in ufology because we don't do it for the money, as you well know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So what's new in the world of UFOs, Peter?
Boy, lots going on. And probably the most major thing I can report, George, is no surprise to the Coast listeners because I've been talking about it with you for now about 14 months. But this is the first time in the 19 years I've been doing this crazy job, director of the National UFO Reporting Center, this is the first time that I have been tempted to say in those 19 years that something extremely unusual is going on in the UFO field. The phenomenon appears to me, from my vantage point, to be ramping up in a fashion that leaves me a little bit alarmed. I say that based on the dramatic increase in the volume of reports, but even more important than the volume of reports, because after all, they can be caused by appearances on Coast to Coast. People get to know me, they decide they're going to submit that UFO sighting report that they had 20 years ago. But what is even more alarming to me than the volume of reports is the consistency of reports. People are reporting essentially the same thing. Hardly a night goes by when I don't get a dozen phone calls from people across the United States or even overseas now, describing clusters of these red, orange, and yellow fireballs. And as far as I can tell, there is no terrestrial explanation, certainly that satisfies me, that explains what this phenomenon is, George.
How fast are these fireballs zipping around, Peter?
Well, it's variable, and that's a very good question, because one of the first question I ask when somebody calls is there any possibility, in the opinion of the witness, that the objects could be so-called Chinese lanterns? They're being used quite frequently now. We know that some of the reports that we've received are due to that phenomenon. They're nothing but hot air balloons. They're probably a meter high. They're maybe 18 or 20 inches across, and they have a pyrotechnic device in them, a candle or a bottle of Sterno or something like that, that heats up the air on the inside of what's called the envelope, that is the hot air bag, and they rise in the night sky, and because of the pyrotechnic device, they can be seen for a long distance.
That's right.
However, I'm not satisfied that but a small percentage of the reports coming to me could be caused by that type of activity, principally because in many instances, these objects are seen going against the prevailing wind. That's one of the things I invite people to do before they submit a written report here. I invite them to call the National Weather Service or the local FAA flight service station, which is a facility that pilots use to get aviation weather and to file a flight plan, to find out which way the wind is blowing and include that information in their reports. More often than not, the objects are moving in a direction that is counter to the prevailing wind. That rules out hot air balloons, which by definition would drift together with the wind. The other thing that is very interesting about many of these cases is that the witnesses report that the objects are maneuvering relative to each other in the cluster. And on a few occasions, the objects are seen to suddenly accelerate and go streaking over the horizon. Those are not hot air balloons, obviously. But it's a very, very strange phenomenon. It has me more than just a little bit worried, George, because I don't believe this planet is anywhere close to being ready for an open landing of aliens.
Now, when you say worried, do you think it's like an invasion type worry or our inability to handle it?
I think about that. I allow for that possibility, but I say worried because we don't know what the outcome of that meeting would be.
No,
the meeting of human beings and, of course, all other living objects on this planet, together with sentient, very technologically skilled creatures who have presumably come from other parts of our galaxy. If they have come from other galaxies, I am really impressed, because the distance between those galaxies is just immense. The distance in our own galaxy is pretty sizable, 20,000 to 40,000 light years across. That's a long, long trip. But something is going on, and thanks to Coast to Coast, I've been able to bring this phenomenon over the last 14 months, bring this phenomenon to the attention of the Coast listeners. I don't know what anybody can do about it, probably nothing. But the first step is to inform the American people as to what's going on, and anybody else who's listening around the world, of course. These reports have come in from South Africa. They've come in from Malaysia, from Thailand, from other parts of Africa, all across Europe, Germany, England, France. Those are the countries from which we usually get this type of report. So it's very interesting, and I'm particularly delighted to be able to have an opportunity tonight to talk a little bit about this phenomenon. Most of all, to encourage our listeners, if they see one of these events, to sit down, write it up objectively, factually, completely, and submit a report. That's the most helpful thing they can do to help me try to get to the bottom of this thing.
Isn't it interesting that this is picking up steam while this planet seems to be in a moment of chaos.
Yeah. I sit here, George, spending most of my day trying to figure out what this UFO phenomenon amounts to and what the sequelae, the future ramifications of all of this could mean for all of us on this planet. And that's the one that concerns me most. I am concerned principally that these things may not be as benign as many people presume they will be or are. And if that's the case, then we have our lap full of a real problem. And what we're going to do about it, I don't know. But the first step is to get people to understand that those of us who spend virtually our entire lives trying to bring the truth to people for whom the UFO phenomenon is really not a day-to-day subject of interest, to bring to those people the fact that it appears to be a very real subject, and it looks to me, after 19 years of work, it looks to me as though we are being visited, certainly on a weekly basis. And as I sit here looking at the database of 91,000 cases that I've collected over the last 19 years, it looks to me as though it's certainly a daily event and perhaps even an hourly event. The only remaining question is whether we may have a continuous presence of these UFOs on or near this planet. That revolutionizes our self-image, of course.
Now, you know, Peter, whenever foreigners visited other lands on this planet, it never ended well for the people that were visited.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? That is the fact that keeps coming back to me and has me a little bit worried. And if it comes to fisticuffs or blows with these creatures, I hope that we can avoid that. I hope they would take control of the situation and allow us to avoid it. But if that happens, I think, to the best of my knowledge, we have no defense that is going to protect this planet from some kind of invasion, protect it from visitors who apprise us that this is actually their backyard, not ours, and they're taking command of this planet.
Oh, boy.
Now, that's that's a pretty tall statement, and I don't have proof. I have strong evidence, but I don't have proof of anything close to that, and I'm hoping that scenario that I've just spun, you know, of course, is wrong. I hope it doesn't happen in my lifetime anyway.
You know, you talked about how they might have gotten here. I think they've learned how to bend space and time, Peter.
Absolutely. When one looks at how much mankind has progressed, his technology has progressed just in the last 25 years, take it back 100 years, and realize that we may be dealing with creatures who have been developing a technology not for hundreds of years, but for hundreds of millions of years, then you begin to realize what the relationship between them and us might be were they to arrive here. It's been said many times, and I'm sure on this program, that when they exercise their technology, to us mere mortals on this planet, it probably looks more like magic than technology. And that, indeed, is what people are reporting to the National UFO Reporting Center on a fairly routine basis. In fact, I just received a very, very interesting report from none other than Missouri.
Aha.
A state that means so much to you and me. I was born there.
Yes, you had an encounter at the airport, didn't you?
Oh, I did, indeed. I had a wonderful time in Missouri. Great place to grow up in the 1950s and 60s. But a very sane and sober-minded woman called just before the program, probably not an hour before. She's trained as an amateur astronomer, has a great deal of sky viewing experience, but even more than that, former military, spent many years in the U.S. Air Force, so she's probably a very, very capable observer. Tonight, she was out watching, looking at the night sky. She watched the International Space Station go over at I think it was about 9:37. It went over Deepwater, Missouri. This is about 60 miles south-southeast of Kansas City. And suddenly, an object went over her location that caused her electronic equipment, including her cell phone, to fail. It scared the living daylights out of her.
I bet it did. We're going to talk more about these cases, Peter, and take some calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Sure is, with Peter Davenport, and we're going to take your phone calls and continue talking with him about these fascinating UFO cases. Welcome back, Peter Davenport with us. Peter, you want to finish that story about the woman's UFO case?
Yeah. The interesting thing about this case tonight, again, Henry County, Missouri, Deepwater, the city of Deepwater, this is so 60 miles south-southeast of Kansas City, out in the western end of Missouri. Very skilled astronomer, former U.S. military. I think she retired from the U.S. Air Force after 20 years. And she saw something go right over her that paralyzed her cell phone for about 2 minutes, I think she said. But then she loaded up her telescope. She didn't want to stay out there any longer. Really upset her, George. She loaded her telescope. She went to start her truck, and her truck would not start. That's one of two electronic interference reports I've received tonight. The other one, I think, was from North Carolina. I don't have that case in front of me. But I mention this case principally because they are coming in with a frequency that leaves me more than just a little unsettled, George. I don't know what's going on. But we should have these reports posted to our website in the next several days, and people can read them on their own.
Didn't you have a police officer sighting also in the St. Louis area?
Oh, yeah. I put that in my note to you tonight because, again, it's in our old stomping ground. I was born in St. Louis. I know you spent a lot of time there.
A lot of time there.
This was, I mentioned it because it was one of the first reports that kicked off this binge of reporting. This was about 14 months ago, the 1st of June, 2012. I talked to this gentleman, very, very nice guy, works as a police officer. He's been doing it for years. He was driving south on Interstate 55, south of St. Louis, and they looked out to the southwest from their location as they drove to the south, saw about, he estimated, 20 to 30 orange lights in a cluster flying over Interstate 55. It was so dramatic, he was hoping to pull off the highway and watch this cluster to try to figure out what they were. And everybody else was too, so much so that they had a multiple car accident on the freeway, again on the 1st of June 2012, and the officer had to go to work as a police officer to get the fender bender straightened out. A very, very interesting case. The following night, something very similar seen from Beacon Rock State Park out on the Columbia River on the West Coast. So these things are happening every night, and I'm very pleased to have an opportunity to share a few of them with our audience tonight.
All right, let's go to some calls. Derek is in St. Louis, Wildcard Line. Hi, Derek.
Hi, guys. I can't believe you're talking about this. I'm a truck driver and from St. Louis. I was heading up 61 going north Tuesday night, and just about 5 miles north of Hannibal, I'm heading north, and outside my driver's side window, it was 7:30, 8 o'clock. It was already getting dark, but it wasn't quite pitch dark. But I see what looks like a campfire just floating in the sky. And I wrote it off. It wasn't moving, and it was by itself. But it was the weirdest thing is that you normally don't see a fire in the sky. And that's the first thing I thought of is, well, that's just got to be a Chinese lantern or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
But it was just really, all it was a fire, but it was just stationary. And it was way up in the air, and it just sat there.
Yeah.
I was just curious, has anybody else reported anything Tuesday night?
You know, if I can answer that one, George.
Sure.
Thanks very much for coming on. Thanks for sharing that information, Derek. A very nice description of what you saw. I hear that type of description every night. And the other interesting thing about your question is most people who call the hotline, the National UFO Reporting Hotline, want to know if anybody else has seen what they've seen. It's a yearning for affirmation. And it leads me to an interesting observation I've made over the last couple of decades or so. It is my estimate that out of 20,000 people who have sightings like yours, Derek, in this country, 20,000 adult, competent, clear-thinking American citizens with normal sensory perceptions who see what they believe may have been a UFO, only one out of 20,000 will ever report it to anybody. It's a very, very interesting phenomenon. I'm more interested in the human psychology that I witness day in and day out than I am about these UFOs, I think. But what I'd like you to do when you get a minute free, Derek, is sit down at a computer, type up a paragraph or two, just takes 5 or 10 minutes, and report that sighting. If anybody else in the vicinity of Hannibal, and I've been to Hannibal, lovely town, saw that object, we would like to invite them to submit reports as well. That's all we can do. If you don't have photographs or you don't have other witnesses, all we can do is ask the witness to write up a report and submit it.
Okay, very good. Let's go next to Angela in Hunter, New York. Hi, Angela. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I wanted to ask your guest if he has heard of the following, which involves two interrelated things that I saw on the Internet. A while ago, I was watching, they have Earth cams. It was just like a night video cam of the sky over New Jersey, and I was watching, you know, lights, just airplanes and stuff. But one of them behaved really weirdly. It looked kind of like the way a rock skips. And when it skipped down, it looked like it shot out another light, and then it kind of looked like it was maneuvering around that. So I'm thinking, well, am I just, you know, extrapolating too much? You know, did I really see that? And then a couple weeks later, I was looking on YouTube, and, you know, what to see things that other people posted of UFOs they said that they filmed. And one guy said that he is in touch with an alien pilot who tells him when she's going to be in the area and tells him to go out and film her. And he said that the alien pilot told him that she was going to be flying a new plane that had exactly that type of, you know, steering mechanism where she shot out like a ball of energy and maneuvered around that. So, you know, I was wondering if you'd ever heard of that.
Well, to be honest with you, Angela, I think I've heard everything.
Yes, you have.
In the course of the last 19 years, I've heard every assertion about aliens and UFOs that you could possibly imagine. Now, I believe some of them. The proof of the pudding, however, is whether people are willing to sit down and take their time to write up a short written account of what they've seen. I have not heard the particular allegation that you just alluded to about a human being talking to an alien pilot. I may have heard similar stories in the distant past, but what I'd like this person to do is share that information in written form. And that is the test. In most cases, with most witnesses, that is the test. That's the imprimatur of whether the story is true or not. I'd like the person to get in touch with me. I'd be happy to talk with him for a little bit to establish whether this incident, this communication, actually took place. But that's the first thing that has to be done, is trying to establish the bona fides, the legitimacy of the information coming in. And with regard to lights in the sky and lights being tape recorded or videotaped, that's probably the most common type of report that comes to me. The difficulty with them is, absent any kind of follow-up investigation, it's very, very difficult to certify that the lights were, in fact, the result of the presence of a UFO.
How do you handle all these cases, Peter?
Yeah, it's become a problem, George. And
you're all by yourself, aren't you?
I do it by myself. I should cite the
self-funded
great assistance I get from a webmaster who's been doing this for the last 19 years as well. But it's grown to such a workload that I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do it for much longer. I've reported on this program just about every time I appear. I've reported that over the last year, the number of cases has trebled. And that means my workload has trebled, trying to process.
Keep up with it. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Trying to proofread them, get them posted to the website, and so on. And I'm going to have to do something about it because I feel burnout coming on. And
don't do that to us.
It's you probably feel the same with your workload. You work very hard at what you do. But I'm going to somehow have to unsaddle myself of the time I spend on the telephone because it's grown almost geometrically. And we don't have the budget.
See, I at least have a staff.
Yeah.
You don't.
I don't have a staff, and what's allowed me to do this up to this point is my fascination with the field, my realization that if UFOs are real, and of course you know me as one who accepts that as a given.
Yes.
This is a very, very important scientific issue, a very important scientific question. And it's unimportant how much work it takes to get the message to the American people. It's unimportant how much it costs me to bring that message to the open forum of our society. But it's grown to such a point now that I'm going to have to change the way I do this. It's just too much work.
Well, let's go to Ron in Tampa, Florida, east of the Rockies. Hey, Ron, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, could some of these fireballs be like meteors or meteorites? Because remember back in February, they had that asteroid and a meteor exploded over Russia.
Yeah.
And February and March, people were seeing a lot of these fireballs. One night, I saw what had to be a meteor. I think it was like a spark of light just for 1 second falling out of the sky, and then it was gone. And here I live in the middle of the city, you know, where I don't usually look for meteors. It wouldn't be easy to see meteors, but it reminded me of one of the shooting stars. I was just wondering, what was up with the meteors? Could some of them be meteors? Or?
Well, that's a very good question, Ron. But in most of the cases, these objects that are reported to my center are reported to be drifting slowly. A meteor is nothing but a rock coming in from space. Typically, they're doing between 8 and 50 miles per second. It's almost impossible for a meteor to be going faster than 50 statute miles a second, because if they were moving at that rate, they would have escaped the gravitational force of the sun long ago. But a meteor doesn't just drift slowly in the night sky. It zips. It's going very, very fast, and that explains why they're so visible, why they give off so much light when they strike the Earth's atmosphere.
134,000 miles an hour.
Peter. Yeah, it will accept your word at it, George. They heat up very, very quickly. They incandesce like the filament in a light bulb and give off a great deal of light. They burn up. They leave a smoky trail. They leave fragments. And those are some of the aspects that I look for when people are reporting a bright object in the night or daytime sky. And if they don't have those characteristics, they can't be a meteor, pure and simple.
That is so, so true. Let's go next to Jennifer in Ojai, California, west of the Rockies. Hello, Jen. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you guys tonight?
Good.
Good.
Listen, I am a first-time caller, and I really don't discuss this subject with anyone. I mean, I'm a businesswoman. I own a big company, a home. I have kids I put through college, and I really don't discuss UFOs with people, but I had to chime in tonight.
Okay.
Okay. I grew up around the Ojai area, and in the middle 90s, I'd say I was in my early 20s. For, like, Saturday Night Fun, we used to go UFO watching. So we would go outside of Santa Paula, if you know that area, and we'd go over by Rockwell International, where there's a negative ion pool, and we would watch these balls of fire come into the atmosphere, and we would be looking towards Ojai, and then this ball would just drop, bam, it looked like a ball of orange and yellow fire, and it would just glide along, and then whoop, it would like swoop about 5 miles and stop again, and then another would come, and this would be going on the city sky around 3 or 4 in the morning, and you could catch it occasionally, and we would bring out our compasses and watch them move. And this is something that we all saw. So I know it sounds strange. We kept it a secret. But then the interesting thing was, later on, I started having these dreams, and I wasn't sure if they were dreams or they were real. Are you guys with me still?
We sure are.
Yep.
Okay. So I would have this dream that I woke up, and around the beach area of Ventura is pretty foggy. So I dreamt that I would walk down the street, I would go into this area, and I would go on board a ship. And I would sit down, and they would be speaking to me, and they would put a little something behind my ear and talk, and I thought I was dreaming. I'd go back home, I'd wake up in the morning, and I'd be like, was that real? Was that a dream? So a couple of my friends had similar experiences. Mm-hmm. And now it's been about 25 years, and I must tell you that the course of my life has gone in a really positive way to be helpful. So what I want to tell you above everything is I think that these beings are here to help us. And I have a little...
I hope you're right.
Over the phone so no one recognizes my voice. But I'm pretty sure that these guys are here to be helpful.
All right. But you don't believe that, Peter. David Jacobs doesn't believe that. And a lot of other people don't either.
Yeah. A lot of Christians think and ruminate on this subject, and they're convinced that they are not benign. And I don't know for sure, George. It could be that they're both. We could have angels and demons at the same time.
That's true.
I have no answer for that. I wish I did. But very interesting account of what you experienced there, Jen. And it's an example, a perfect example of what I was talking about a few minutes ago. My estimate is that out of people like you, and I talk to them all day, every day, who've had what could have been UFO or alien-related experiences or observations, only one has ever come forward and reported it in a meaningful way. They might talk about it at the 4th of July picnic or Thanksgiving dinner or something like that, but trying to get them to sit down and write it out thoroughly, objectively, factually, and completely is a very difficult proposition. In fact, I think the hardest part of my job is trying to get witnesses to recognize the need to write it down. Everybody wants to talk about their sightings, but the only thing that really means anything is a written report. I'd love to have a short written report submitted by a Jen, and we will post it and let the world know about it. The value of it is that it will preserve the information surrounding your experience. But even more than that, it might encourage people who visit our website, who saw the same thing or something similar on a different date or at a different location, to say, I had a similar sighting. Maybe I'd better report mine as well. And it will encourage people to submit their reports in written form.
Peter, thanks again for being on the program. You know, you're always invited, my friend. I love your work.
Boy, great place to talk. And I'd like to compliment you about your recent program on Lyme disease. Boy, that's really an awful disease. I've struggled with it for
years. Oh, my God,
years,
I didn't know that.
And you've done a great public service in bringing that to the attention of the American people, too, George. But thank you very much for the airtime. As always, thanks for your continuing support. And as long as there's a question of UFOs, I'll be here.
You got it. Peter Davenport, website, of course, is the UFOcenter.com. UFOcenter.com. Up next, a classic coast-to-coast show, Shadows of the Dark. John Zaffa standing by.